Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hello and welcome to another Baseball America podcast. I'm Hudson Belinsky. With me is Carlos Collazo, and today we're going to talk about the NHSI, the National High School Invitational, which just wrapped up this past weekend in Cary, North Carolina. And Carlos, it was a doozy. It was a good tournament.
Yeah, this was an awesome tournament, Hudson. This is the first time I've really covered the tournament all the way through, and I was on most of the bracket games this week, and it seems like every single game I covered was competitive. There were guys who were interesting prospect players doing well or having impacts on the game. It was really exciting to see all these high school players and watch a really competitive tournament this week. It was fantastic.
Yeah, and we're gonna break it down a little bit. We're gonna talk about some of the prospects, some of the top names, and we're also gonna talk about sort of the horse race of it a little bit. And Carlos, you mentioned that you were able to have eyes on a lot of those tournament games, those bracket games. The champion of this event was the Orange Lutheran Lancers. And Carlos, about that team, what stuck out to you getting the chance to see them this week and seeing how they performed?
Well, I didn't see them much until the championship game in the semifinal matchup. But what really stuck out in the championship game was just the defense that this team played. Obviously, later in the tournament for a four-day tournament for a high school team, the arms start to get challenged near the end. The depth is kind of challenged. But this was a 3-2 win for Orange Lutheran. It wasn't like people were scoring runs left and right. And that had a lot to do with the defense that Lutheran played. Left fielder Isaac Martinez came up with two huge throws from the outfield to cut down runners. At the plate, Tristan Hanoyan, who's a senior shortstop, he made a couple fantastic plays in the dirt, in the hole, going to his right and picking a ball with his backhand and making a strong throw. And then really the final double play that ended that game and gave them the championship, a ball kind of hopped up on him up the middle. He fields it no problem, steps on the bag, and fires a strike to first base. So really the thing that stuck out to me was the solid defense this team played. Garrett Mitchell is a guy who I didn't see him do a ton at the plate. He had a couple hard hits, didn't go for much statistically, but you can see that he pounded the ball really well, runs really well, and every time there was a ball hit to him in the outfield, it seemed like he was just settled under it perfectly, taking really good routes. So all around for Orange Lutheran, I'd say the defense really stood out to me.
Mm-hmm. And you mentioned Tristan Hanoyan. The week that he had, just altogether, I mean, he played good defense. Obviously, you mentioned he made that the game clinching, the tournament clinching play at the end of the game on Saturday, but also put the ball in play and kind of shot line drives to the gaps. And not sure how he's going to fit as a pro prospect per se, but Looks like he could be a really good college player for Texas Christian next year.
Yeah, I mean, he really stuck out to me well. And when I talked to him after the game, he mentioned how coming to the tournament a few years ago as a freshman, he really didn't like how Lutheran played. I think they won just one game in 2014 when they came back. A few weeks before this tournament, he wasn't really happy with how his team was taking at bats and how they were swinging the bat before leading into this tournament. But he said he was really impressed with how his team, they came together a little bit and started taking less selfish at bats. And that really came across when Josiah Dixon hit a sac fly. And I believe it was the sixth inning. He came in to pinch hit. He was kind of chasing some balls across the plate, and then he got a fastball up, and he just took it into the outfield for a sac fly. And it's those kinds of things that helped them win, those team at-bats. He just knew he needed to put the ball in play in the outfield to score a run, and he drove across the third run to help them get the win over Dana Hills, which, I mean, they played extremely competitively as well and were right in the ballgame the whole time.
Yeah, and Josiah Dixon, only a sophomore, but looks like he's going to be a pretty good ball player himself. I got the chance to watch those guys take BP earlier in the week, and the ball was just jumping off his bat. Just a lot of hard line drives, especially to the pole side for Josiah Dixon. Just a sophomore, but Believe he was a 15U national team member last summer, but looks like a pretty explosive young guy, right-handed hitter. And yeah, you mentioned the coming up clutch there in the bottom of the sixth, I guess that was. But yeah, I mean, and that's sort of one of the things we see often in this tournament is we see. Obviously, we see plenty of seniors who are draft eligible prospects, but we also see a lot of good underclassmen. Mm-hmm. In a couple of years ago, we saw Royce Lewis from J. Sarah Catholic out in Southern California come to this tournament and just put on a show. And not to say that he wasn't a known commodity before that, but it was sort of like on the national stage to come in and perform like that really catapulted him to a guy who looked like he could be a top of the class type talent.
Yeah.
Almost, pretty instantly as a sophomore.
I'll say a guy that really stood out to me. He's not an underclassman, but Brandon Dieter for South Hills. He's a junior Stanford commit. And he got the ball against Archbishop McCarthy, who is the number one team in the country, according to our top 25 rankings, in the second round of bracket play. And he told his coach the week before that he wanted the ball against McCarthy. They knew they had a chance to match up against this team. And he wasn't touching. He wasn't bumping up 90 on the radar gun. I think he sat around 85 over seven innings. But he was dealing the entire time against Archbishop McCarthy. There was one point near the end of the game where he retired 11 batters in a row. He struck out six batters, walked just one, and allowed only one run against one of the best lineups in the country. He had a four-seam fastball, two-seam fastball, changeup, curveball. And throughout this outing, it really looked like he commanded each of those pitches extremely well. He looked really comfortable. And then to top it off, I mean, as an offensive player, I think he had like six or seven hits throughout the tournament. Yeah, he had seven hits, which is top three just going off of hits. I mean, it's only a couple days. But that really speaks to his talent as a two-way player. And he was really one of the guys that stood out to me the most.
Absolutely. And you mentioned that sitting around that 85, but, bumping up to like 87, 88 in those early innings when I was over there and showed you just outstanding command of the fastball and was able to locate it down into his arm side or glove side and then bust out the sharp three-quarter breaking ball that he had and, showed some change-ups and then had a harder breaking ball that he threw for strikes as well. It was a really impressive look for him. And, kids, you don't need to throw 95 to open eyes. This guy, I mean, you look at compact arm action, really good athlete on the mound and filled the zone, got the job done.
Yeah. So you mentioned him as an athlete coming off the mound. There were a couple balls where he had to come off the mound and he did it like it was no problem at all. There was like a swinging bunt. At one point he bounced off the mound, fielded it cleanly and made a strong, solid throw to first base. He actually played first base in the first game against Brother Rice, their normal first baseman, is dealing with some arm issues right now, so he wasn't able to play. And he really fielded that position like he'd been playing there his whole life. So it's very apparent how athletic and easy the game comes to Dieter. So, he was just one of the guys that stood out to me. But, yeah, great point there. I'm looking at the TrackMan information we have on him, and his fastball velocity averaged 85.8. But like you said, when you have all those other pitches working, you really don't need to be pushing 95 miles an hour to have success. And I imagine there's some projectability with him as well.
Sure. Really young man, obviously. I mean, just a junior. And you look at the athleticism and the ability not only to spin the ball, but to spin the ball and throw it for strikes. And the other thing that sticks out to me about Brandon Dieter is in the preseason when we had identified South Hills as a potential, top scale kind of team, their head coach Darren Murphy filled out the high school coaches survey that we do send out every off season, and he's got prospects on that team. He's got guys who are seniors who are going to play good Division I schools. You look at the shortstop, Jacob Amaya, who's a significant, pro prospect who had a good week. You have John Durth, who plays first base and pitches for that team, was dealing with a little bit of arm stuff this week. But Carlos Morales, the other one. And so this is a team with prospects. And then for Darren, on his questionnaire, he singled out Brandon Dieter as sort of the leader of this team as an underclassman. And I think that really speaks volumes about the kid.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, you mentioned Jacob Amaya. He hit the ball pretty well regularly, but what really stood out to me was his defense up the middle at shortstop. I mean, he's not the fastest guy I've ever seen, but he has really quick lateral actions in the infield, very smooth with the glove, really strong throws. I saw a couple off-balance throws that he made no problem and really looked like a solid shortstop out there. You mentioned Morales. He got the first start of the week for South Hills, and it was kind of an effectively wild type of start from him, I would say. But he held Brother Rice to hitless through the first four innings of the game. He wasn't really getting on top of his curveball as much as he wanted, but when he did get on it a few times, you could see a sharp late break for that ball. So if he can kind of get better at getting on top of that ball regularly, there's a lot of promise with him as well. But like you said, really throughout the whole lineup, there are guys who are really interesting, really talented players. And, I mean, they played well this weekend. They got to the semifinals against Lutheran before dropping 5-3, but really looked strong in every game that I was able to see them.
No question. And sure, they took a tough loss in the semifinals of a national tournament this week, but we have not seen the end of South Hills. They will... I'm sure they will be forcing our hand in the rankings over the next several weeks. They know that they're a good team, and they go out and compete, and they've got pieces. And I think as you see a team like that, I mean, these tournaments are so challenging for high school teams to go out and play four straight days. Not only just the wear on these kids' bodies for playing as many games and traveling across the country and not necessarily being used to that, but also – you know, running out of arms or not necessarily being able to throw your top guys, you know, whenever you can. So I think this is a team that sticks out as a team to watch, especially when they get to the point where they're not going to have to play 4 days in a row. You think of what they can do if they've got to play on back-to-back days or if they have a few days off, and you talk about Morales and Dieter on the mound. Yeah. That's a pretty good 1-2 punch, however you want to throw those two guys, however they line up. That's pretty good high school team. And you mentioned the victory over Archbishop McCarthy. And I think that's probably the next team we ought to talk about, because obviously they entered the tournament as the number one team in the country. You know, 3-1 for them, that's not the best week.
Yeah, which says a lot about them.
Like a down week for them. Yeah, but Carlos, I guess how much of them did you get to see this week, and sort of what were your impressions of McCarthy, a team that's obviously a powerhouse?
Yeah, definitely. They were actually the first team that I watched during the week. I watched the McCarthy-Arlington game, and Archbishop McCarthy won that one 3-1. Joe Perez took the ball in that game, and I actually got a chance to talk to his dad it was the day before the tournament started in BP. And his dad was telling me how Joe had kind of refined his mechanics a little bit, wasn't coiling as much in his delivery, got a little more tilt in it. And so they were looking forward to seeing how he did with that simplified delivery. And he only threw three innings, but he struck out six batters over those three innings, was seeing 91-93 with his fastball there, some 94 scattered in there, and touching 95 in his last inning. And after the game, he says that wasn't his best stuff, which for me, it was kind of funny to go in there and see a high school kid throwing mid-90s and have him say that wasn't his best stuff. That kind of speaks to the talent that Joe Perez had. But really the best sequence that I saw from him was in the third inning. He actually lost his command a bit and walked back-to-back batters, but really bounced back. In the next batter, he threw three straight fastballs and got swinging strikes on all three of them and touched 95, which was the highest velo that we had seen from him that entire game. So I know Perez is kind of a guy who people are trying to get some consensus on moving into the draft, just because he hasn't pitched that long compared to a lot of these guys who are up near the top of the list. But it was a really fun look for me, because this is the first time that I've seen him live. And I think you really see a lot of the talent that he has there. And just that last at-bat was phenomenal to me. And again, like I said before, after the game, he was talking about how that wasn't the best stuff that he's had. So very excited to see what he does throughout the rest of the high school season. What were your thoughts, Sam? I didn't touch on Terrell, but really curious to see what you thought of them. You might have gotten to see more looks on McCarthy than I did throughout the tournament. But
sure, yeah, I probably – You know, I had our staff really was great. They would, you know, everybody was letting me know when the hitters I wanted to see were due up, and so I was able to run over to the fields and get probably about 10 at bats of both Perez and Terrell. But yeah, I mean, that's interesting that that Mike Perez had brought that up with Joe's changes, because Joe in the summertime, like you said, he was very, like, he would coil his hips and coil his shoulders and kind of like you'd see his head moving up and down a lot throughout that. And so he had the explosive arm speed. He wasn't always synced up. Sometimes he'd be a little bit early with his front side and he'd yank his fastballs or fly open with that front side. But at the NHSI, like you said, was not his best stuff. This is a guy who's been up to 98 this spring and has shown you a hard upper 80 slider, you know, that projects as a plus pitch. And he's a very fresh arm, having only thrown, I think it's about 15 or 16 innings combined as a sophomore and a junior. And so he's at a point right now where he's starting to make that progress and starting to really understand who he is on the mound and figure out how to use his body. But so the upside with him on the mound is significant. You have to do a little bit more projection on that one. And, you know, that will be one that as scouts get to talk to him and get to know him better, we'll continue to understand, you know, just how high that ceiling is. But the other thing with Joe is that the bat. I mean, this guy took batting practice. One of the things I look for in batting practice is the ability to use the opposite field and not just use it, but, you know, kind of hit with some authority to the opposite field to stay back and punch a ball hard to the opposite field. And that's something that I saw from Joe Perez, and he stayed back and was hitting some really authoritative line drives to the opposite field. Obviously he's got significant power to the pull side. And then in one of his at bats during the week, he went with an outside pitch, kind of hit a high trajectory fly that was looked like it was going to be right around the fence down to right field, caught a little bit of the wind and hopped over, went about 350, 340 feet, something like that. And so, you know, you mentioned the point about trying to find consensus with him, and it's hard because he's got legitimate offensive tools and legitimate potential with two pitches on the mound so far, and he's athletic, so that's a tough one.
Yeah, for sure. Were there any other big prospects that you wanted to touch on? I know you saw a lot. One of the ones that popped out to me just with his performance was Mason Denneberg. I know you got to watch his start, and he's really another one of those two-way guys. I feel like there's a ton in this class and really that we've seen lately, a bunch of really talented two-way guys. Are there more than normal in your mind at this point, or is it just me kind of figuring this out as I go along?
No, I think you hit the nail on the head. There's a lot of two-way prospects in this draft class and in this high school class as well. Like we just talked about Joe Perez and Mason Denneberg, a 2018 prospect who is very, very exciting with his potential both ways. And the other one we saw this week was Hagen Danner. Hagen Danner, probably a little bit more of a, for me right now, he's more of a prospect on the mound. But he does have some real power and compact stroke at the plate and just some feel for hitting. But, you know, on the mound, he was consistently, you know, I guess he was probably around 88, 92, touching 93 for most of that outing. And you can see all of that outing on our site. Josh Norris shot the whole game from center field. And so you can go on our site and watch every single pitch that Hagen Danner threw.
Yeah.
And one of those pitches you'll see is a pretty nasty breaking ball that he had feel for to locate in the strike zone with some late snapping action to it. So he's legitimate two-way.
I'm glad you brought up Danner. Just to touch on Danner really quick. He pitched the Saturday game, and I remember I came out there. That was the first game I watched in the morning. It was 8:30, the end of a long week, and I was pretty tired at this point. And then I see Danner on the mound, and he starts popping the mitt right away, and I was instantly kind of bolted back into action. You mentioned his curveball. I think that might be the best individual pitch I saw the entire week. And then if you look at the TrackMan stuff, the max fastball velocity, Hagen Danner is number 4 on the list there. So pretty impressive at 93.4 for max fastball velo. But not to cut you off, go back to Nick Prado. Sorry about that. Just wanted to chime in.
No, absolutely. those are good points. Yeah. Prado's the legend. This is a guy who hit the walk-off winner to bring the Little League World Series championship to California in 2011. And the legend has built since then. He's a two-time hero for the 18U national team in gold medals in the World Cup in 2015 and the Pan Am Games in 2016. Right now he's more of a hitting prospect, but he's just because of how good he is. He takes really quality at-bats. He rarely, if ever, expands the strike zone. He can really pull the ball with some authority. He can shoot it to the opposite field. Very strong, balanced guy with fluid hands and loose wrists. But then on the mound, you throw him on the mound, he'll pitch 87, 89 with a plus changeup and a ton of command. I think J.J. Cooper had said that he was in his first two innings of his start early in the week, of the 17 pitches he threw, 16 were strikes. So,
that's ridiculous.
That'll work.
This week, I think he threw 9 1/3 innings and struck out 9 batters and didn't walk a single batter. So that's pretty impressive for a guy who's thought of as more of an offensive prospect.
Yeah, he's a freak. And, he's not like – and the thing about him is he's not explosive. He's not like this isn't like 80 bat speed or anything like that or crazy arm speed. But what he is extremely balanced, extremely composed, mature beyond his years. He's been there. He's been in big situations time and time again and delivered. And the other thing is the other thing to mention about Prado is – we had him run 4-3-3 to first base on a 4-3 and played a little bit of outfield. I didn't get to see him tested out there, but I would certainly not rule out right field as a possibility for this guy, given that he is a capable runner. He's not a douche runner, and he's obviously got arm strength and accuracy and athleticism. And so if you're looking at him from a pure profile standpoint, he's arguably got enough offensive upside to be just a first baseman. And he's a very good defender at first baseman or at first base, if that's what you want him to do.
Yeah.
But I would not be surprised if a team took him and put him out in right field and gave him a chance to do that, because he has a chance to boost his value a little bit by being able to do that.
Yeah, definitely. I got to see him in right field a little bit. Again, I didn't see him have any chances out there. Like you said, I think they moved him back to first base kind of in the middle of the game that I was watching. But I was a little surprised to see him in the outfield, because I didn't know that he played there. And if he can, that speaks a little bit to his athleticism. So that'll be interesting to see.
And then bring it back a little bit to that original point you made about two-way guys. Yes, this class is loaded with two-way guys. it is just ridiculous. You look at guys like Jordan Adele, or you can go on our site and read Carlos's feature on Jordan.
Yeah, talking to Jordan was really fun. Going into that feature, before I wrote it, I had just heard nothing but how athletic this kid was. He's one of the most athletic kids in this entire class. Steve Bernhardt with the Baseball Factory said that you could definitely make the argument that he is the most athletic player in this class. But what really struck to me when I was talking to Joe about that is just how much work he's put into being that athletic. Obviously, he's got the NFL bloodlines from his father, but he really has worked a lot to especially improve his run times. He said the first time that he ran the 60, and was timed. It was like around a 7. He's got that all the way down to a 6.19, I believe, at his last timed 60. So this guy is an extremely hard worker. He's working out like 2 or 3 hours every day of the week, except for like, I know his dad told me that he had to tell him he needs to stop and take a break. Like, this kid would keep working every day if he was allowed to. His dad literally has to tell him to stop, but he's a really exciting guy. I think he's trying to be or focus more on the position player side of things just because he understands his athleticism. And he said he thinks he can impact the game more when he's playing every day out there in center field, chasing down balls. He said one of his favorite things to do was to just chase down fly balls. And with that kind of range and athleticism, I'm sure it's probably extremely fun to watch as well.
Sure. I mean, he's a freak athlete. There's no question about it. The thing is, though, like, it's hard to walk away from a guy who's like 92, 94 with a true plus breaking ball like he has.
Yeah. Do you like him more on the mound better? Because I know I've heard that his breaking ball might be one of the best pitches in the class as well.
Yeah, I mean, I would prefer him as a position player just because of his wide variety of tools. But, I mean, I think that you could certainly see it happen. And like, right now we see Anthony Gose is going to give it a shot, going to go back to pitching a little bit. And that's sort of like, I think Jordan Adell probably has a little bit more explosiveness offensively than Anthony Gose had. But I think that's a decent comparison case. You look at the guys like Aaron Hicks or Anthony Gose, guys who have huge arms, and Gose was mid-90s in high school. Mm-hmm. So like you're comparing him to like along those lines. Like, should it not work out for whatever reason, you know, if he's not able to hit at the major league level, that's something that we just really can't ever be super certain about for high school guys. But should he not work out as a hitter, there's a legitimate future for him as a bullpen arm potentially, just because it's a really quick arm. Obviously, he's got a great body and great athleticism on the mound, and it's like a 12-6 hammer that's like 82, 84, yep. And it dives late, and it has fastball tilt out of the hand. So it's like, it's just the athleticism's crazy on that one. But, yeah, and you got him, you got Hunter Green. Hunter Green's the legend himself, you know, 17-year-old throwing 100 and, you know, striking the guys out and just a freakishly athletic delivery and then playing a decent shortstop. And, oh, by the way, you can hit him 450 feet with. So
yeah, I actually saw him at the Perfect Game Classic, and he destroyed everyone in the Home Run Derby. Hit, like, his first five just back-to-back-to-back-to-back home runs in the Home Run Derby. Obviously, that's not game, but he really put on the display of the raw power there. And obviously, you know about the arm. I mean, all these guys hitting and pitching, it's ridiculous how they can seemingly do it all with ease.
Yeah, and it extends to the college side as well. Like, today, we're recording this on Sunday evening. Today, I just saw Louisville against Virginia. I saw Adam Haseley throw 7 strong innings for Virginia, and he's more of a prospect as a center fielder with a bat, but dynamic athlete and very good athlete on the mound as well. And then Brendan McKay, who did not pitch today, but, you know, looks like he's almost right now. It would be shocking if he got out of the top five in the draft, and saw him today you know, pull a ground ball down the right field line. I should say first base line. It kind of skipped past the diving Pavin Smith there at first base. And then he goes backside with a hard line drive down the third base line for a double. So, like, this guy's just a really, really good-looking hitter. Not unanimous that he's more of a hitter than a pitcher, but I would say at this point the consensus, if you talk to 10 scouts, you probably get 6, maybe 7 will say that they prefer him as a hitter. But then that said, there are teams who pick extremely high in the draft who are believed to be in on him more as a pitcher. So there's that two-way thing that we're going to be talking about that a lot as the draft comes closer and some of these guys start to distinguish themselves a little bit in one way or the other. But yeah, I mean, Carlos, I guess, and then I guess to wrap that up, with Mason Denneberg, who was one of the early guys you mentioned, this is a guy who came out and shoved it for six innings, and it was, you know, really good projectable body and athletic delivery, filled the zone 91, 93 early on, settled in sort of that 88, 91 range, spun a sharp mid-70s, low to mid-70s breaking ball, and then threw some really good right-on-right change-ups with looked like maybe sort of like a football grip on the change-up, and that he was getting on the side of a little bit, and just had feel for it and located it. And this is the guy who's a apparently the quarterback of his high school team. He catches when he doesn't pitch. Like, this is – it will be an exciting player for us to bear down on this coming summer as we start to do our research for the 2018 class.
Bringing it back to this class, not to cut you off, but I feel like Hans Kraus is a guy we haven't talked about, and he's a dude that is obviously a big name. And if you look at the TrackMan stuff, his name is all over it for the pitcher. He had the highest max fastball velocity at 97.2. He was second in max fastball spin rate at a little above 2,600, and then max breaking ball spin rate as well. There's Hans Kraus's name at number three at 2,900. I didn't get to see his start. I saw him hit a walk-off in the semifinals against Winder Barrow as a hitter, but did you get to see any of him as a pitcher? I mean, it seems like he was doing everything for Dana Hills this tournament.
Yeah, I sat on the start that he made against Jacob Heatherly, left-hander from Coleman, who we'll talk about, I guess, after Hans. But like, the thing that sticks out probably the most about Hans Kraus is his competitive fire. I mean, this is a kid who's just so passionate out there, and it's really, I think it's admirable to see a kid who really gives it his all and is going to live and die by the result. But you know, he comes right after guys. He stares hitters down. He you know, He's a very pleasant kid, you know, when the game's not happening, but he's got fire. I wouldn't want to be in the box against this guy. No. I mean, he looks like he wants to kill you. I mean, it's like he comes right at guys with a fastball. Some of the radar guns behind home plate had 98 in the first inning, and you know, not the best command, but control. I mean, he was around the zone with his fastball. A really, really good breaking ball. Looks like an above average or a plus pitch at the next level. More top to bottom action on it this time around than last summer when it was more of a sweeper. Kind of throws from, I mean, the way this guy throws is going to draw scrutiny always, and when he's in the minor leagues and is going to be talked about as a prospect for the next few years, he'll probably be. You'll see him. My guess is every single year in his write-up, you'll see something about his violent mechanics and his likelihood of ending up in a relief role.
Yeah.
Just because of sort of how the way his arm action works is sort of like the way when his hands break, it's sort of like a deep arm swing in the back, with like his arm like bending at like a 90 degree angle and his back elbow coming up real high, and then he slings it through like a slightly lower three-quarter slot and finishes across his body with recoil in his arm, and that's what was interesting to me, to see him stay really on top of his breaking ball and generate that 12-6 action on it as often as he was able to, just because he was, like I said, he was like a lower three-quarter slot, and that sort of like made sense in the summer when you saw that like that breaking ball kind of go with his arm slot. And he threw a couple changeups, not a ton, but used it to bail himself out against lefty hitters. You had Jacob Heatherly, who's more of a prospect on the mound himself, but left-handed batter, who was jumping all over Hans's fastball early on and smoked two line drives off of him. And then Hans goes at him and gets him with the changeup down and away, gets him to fly out. But then you mentioned the champion or the in the tournament, this guy, like, you know, given his history, I kind of like, I was half joking, but in the beginning of that inning when they when Dana Hills did walk off, I was,
oh no, like, you can't be modest about this. You definitely called this. I'll go ahead and give you the credit for it. You 100% called what happened, but go ahead.
But yeah, I mean, so like, I was half joking because I was like, Hans is gonna walk it off because like there was like, I think he was like up fifth or sixth in that inning.
Yeah, you had to get the bases like, loaded and one out for him to get up. Yeah.
Yeah, and he had hit a line drive to the opposite field in his first at bat of the game to give Dana Hills a 2-0 lead, and then like he kind of hit like this soft, not hard, fly ball to right, low line drive just past the diving second baseman, mm-hmm. and he throws up his arms and looks back and sees all his teammates charging after him. It was
hilarious. Awesome. After the game, yeah. He was saying he rounded first base, and the way his team knew it was a walk-off pretty much right when they hit it. They were already running up and out to kind of celebrate with him, but the route they took was kind of right up the baseline behind Hans, and he rounds first base and doesn't see anyone, and he tells us after the game that he was about to go back to first because he thought that he didn't have a walk-off right away, but he turns around to go back and sees him and just throws his helmet off and starts celebrating. It was a great moment, And yeah, from talking to Hans, from just watching him play, seeing him on the field, his intensity is easily it's extremely apparent, and it's fun mm-hmm. to see.
Mm-hmm. And I think with that, I mean we have to get ready for the high school top 25 conference call. So we'll probably wrap this one up. But Carlos, any final thoughts on the NHSI before we go here?
I'd just say that if you have a chance to come watch this tournament, if that's a thing that you can feasibly make happen, you should definitely do it. With a lot of the high school guys, it's kind of in a showcase situation, but these teams are really trying to win this tournament. So you get to see a really cool competitive environment. From everything I've heard, this has been one of the strongest fields we've had in this tournament. So you're going to see not only a bunch of really good games, but a bunch of players who are in the future could be stars on major league teams or really good players in college. So it was a super fun tournament, and I'm really excited to have been able to watch all these games and to talk to these players.
Absolutely, no question. I ditto on everything you just said. and to wrap it up, you can follow myself at Hudson Belinsky or Carlos at Carlos A. Collazo. Collazo spelled C-O-L-L-A-Z-O. And you can head over to baseballamerica.com. And we have plenty of content on the NHSI. We have 32 game recaps. Early this week, you'll be able to see our all NHSI team. There's plenty of content, video on there. You can watch all of Hagen Danner's starts. And we'll have plenty of draft content coming up over the coming weeks and months. So for Carlos Collazo, I'm Hudson Belinsky. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you soon.
Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you, with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger. For the ones who get it done.